I am now quite pleased to introduce you to Karen Cater, who is the Director of Education, Leadership, and Advocacy for Apple, and also the Chair of the Partnership for 21st Century Skills. I've had the distinct pleasure of knowing Karen for several years. I consider her an inspiration every day and a hero of mine, and so I'm quite thrilled that she took time to be with us today, coming down from the corporate office of Apple. If you were with us last year, you remembered that Ken Kay was with us last year. He's the president of the Partnership for 21st Century Skills, and that organization is playing a very significant national role in driving awareness about the need for 21st century skills, but also providing some very valuable research and tools to help all of us move along. And so with both of her hats, her Apple hat as well as her Partnership 21st Century hat, I want you to welcome Karen Cater.
Okay, so I actually wear a third hat, and that's that of an educator. I was 17 years in public education prior to going to Apple in 97. So it's amazing to me that I've actually been at Apple for 10 years, so it is really a second career at this point. But definitely my education hat is probably what's nearest and dearest to my heart and what sort of causes me to get up every day and do this work. So I'm going to put some of what you just saw, some of those statistics, in a little bit of a context, because the last thing was, so what now? So we're going to go through this just a little bit. The Partnership for 21st Century, I don't want to join a network. Good question, though. It just assumes I'd rather be online, right? So the Partnership for 21st Century Skills is actually 30 organizations. There are companies like Apple and Intel and Dell and Microsoft and Cisco and others. They're also, it's the National Education Association. John Wilson, the executive director, is the past chair of the partnership. The American Association of School Librarians, and many foundations and other groups. So this is a far-reaching national and actually international focused partnership. And it's really interesting. It was first started by the Department of Education, or funded by the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., and it's now completely funded by the partners. But it really is a collaboration between business, education, and policymakers. And we have a lot of outreach to the Chief State School Officers, the National Governors Association, states. There are leadership states now that have signed on as 21st Century Skills Partnership states. So all of that is just a quick context, a quick background. And I've had the opportunity this year to chair the partnership. And in December, and actually this article is in your packet, you can read the whole article, the cover story of Time Magazine, How to Build a Student for the 21st Century, was probably the best PR we could possibly hope for. This is a story about the big public conversation the nation is not having about education, whether an entire generation of kids will fail to make the grade in the global economy because they can't think their way through abstract problems, work in teams, distinguish good information from bad, or speak a language other than English. So again, the article, How to Build a Student for the 21st Century, is definitely pertinent to your whole discussion today. So there are five pieces that really set up the urgency, five things that have converged. The Shift Happens video really kind of mixed it all up and put a lot of the statistics out there. But these are really the five things. First of all, the student experience outside of school is very different than in general what they find in school. Outside of school, they are allowed creativity, mobility, multitasking, a lot of collaboration, a lot of talking together, producers and publishers of content. All of those kinds of things are what we find students doing outside of school and in very in pockets of excellence, I would say, in school as well. A lot of what I'll say here, I will say right up front, our great schools are doing all the right things. They're definitely our pockets of excellence. So if you find me sort of doing a gross generalization of the issues in schools, take that into account. Not slamming schools. Second, students, again, thinking about this generation of students, they're very connected and they're in different kinds of ways. In schools, many times we're still considering whether we should give students email accounts, and they're definitely over email. They're connected with text messaging and instant messaging. They're also very connected within their virtual communities, MySpace, Facebook. We saw the statistics on MySpace. So these students are connected to each other in ways that we really don't make use of in school. And third, they are publishers. They mix content. They go get content online, mix it up, republish. If you think about MySpace and Facebook, there's a lot of brand identity. Kids are starting at a young age thinking, or they should be thinking about, what is their brand? What are they about? What do they stand for? And much of what they publish online is who they are and what they stand for. Their favorite quotes, their movies, their video clips, their music, all of that you can find in their branded space. So you think about this generation of students and their experience outside of school is very different than their experience inside of school. And we know that culture eats strategy every day of the week. So we can have the best strategic plans in our schools, in our communities, in our government, and if we don't take into account the culture that we're working within, we'll lose. So second, the world is flat. We really don't have to say a lot about this, but it is about competition, but it's also about global interdependence. And we know, Thomas Friedman has republished and published and republished this book multiple times now. And it's because it continues to be sort of the main voice of why we should be paying attention to other places in the world. And I would say the second one is really the whole global warming, Al Gore's work and other people, a lot of people are involved in the work on global warming. And the notion that what we do in the U.S. today absolutely affects people all over the world, people in poor places. I think the Hurricane Katrina actually sort of brought a lot of this to light and really brought the awareness that as we think about what we're doing in the U.S., we absolutely have to think about our global interdependence and how we interact around the world and across the world. And again, more statistics on China and India coming at you. But, if we think about the competition factor, but also think about the necessity for global interdependence, I heard someone recently say that teachers will be the great peacemakers in the 21st century. We really need students to grow up with a real sense of what it means to be a global community. And it's beyond competition. But let's talk about competition. So it is about competition for the United States, but it's also about teamwork. And it's interesting that these two things kind of are mixed in the same conversation. Last fall, we did a partnership, worked with the Conference Board, the Corporate Voices for Working Families, and the Society for Human Resource Management, and interviewed human resource departments in 461 companies. And really to get their perspective on what they're seeing, both in their current workers coming into the workforce and also what they'll need in the next 5 years. So just a couple highlights, and actually you have the executive summary of this report in your packet as well. But first of all, 72% are deficient in basic English writing skills, grammar, spelling. Okay? We still need to teach those basic, very basic skills. 81% are deficient in written communications, but there were some bright spots. They found students able to use information technology, were fairly good at teamwork, and had a sense of a respect for diversity. So those were some interesting bright spots. The interesting question to me, when we ask them, what do you see in the next 5 years that you're going to be lacking? What are the things that schools today should be focusing on so that in 5 years you have what you need coming into the workforce? 77% making appropriate choices concerning health and wellness. So that, again, points to the fact that we have these larger issues to deal with. But 75%, second place, creativity and innovation. Companies across the country are knowing that they absolutely need to innovate. They need to stay on top of their game. They need to create. They need to think clearly. 64%, the use of non-English languages as a tool for understanding other nations, markets, and cultures. So really looking at how are they going to find enough people to hire that can operate in a global context. And as we start breaking down the barriers of global trade, et cetera, this is a really important thing that we need to think about in our schools. It's not just about foreign language or world languages. It's also about operating in a global context, in cultures, et cetera. 53% understanding global markets, economic and cultural impacts of globalization. So the next piece, so we talked about the student experience, the world is flat and global interdependence, global competition and workplace skills, and finally, information. Information is ubiquitous, right? Someone, if you say, what is a gerund? How many people could say, what is a gerund? Yeah, there you go. Those are the teachers in the crowd. So when we think about what we test kids on, those are the kinds of things we ask students to know, but what we really need to absolutely focus on are the performance skills and the things students can do to write effectively and communicate effectively in essays and other forms. And then finally, the fifth point really gets to the fact that the statistic, I don't remember what the statistic was there, the one I heard was the top 15% of the students in China, the top 15% of the students in China outnumber all of the students we have in our schools today. So we need way more of our students to graduate with being very competent at 21st century skills for life, for work, and for higher education. So what's our challenge? Our challenge is that we have a 69% graduation rate currently in the U.S. So we have way too many students not making it through. We do have a dropout nation. Recently, I was at the National Governors Association convened a meeting in Washington that was called the Silent Epidemic, and really shined a very strong light on the issue of dropouts across the country. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But what is this disconnect? So this is a study, and this is actually the four bars represent 1983, 1990, 1995, and 2000. There are three questions that the National Center for Education Statistics from the Condition of Education, this was in 2002, published. So it's a little bit old now. And I will point out, these are 12th graders, so these are students who did not already vote with their feet, right? They're still in school. The question was, will your school be important later in life? And you can see the trend is going in the wrong direction. Second, is your schoolwork meaningful? And third, are your courses interesting? So we definitely have a declining sense of relevance with our students in school today. And we know, again, back to the education pipeline or the number of the students who are making it through, 60 out of 100 ninth graders, 68% graduate high school on time, 40 will go to college, 27 will still be enrolled 2 years later, 18 will graduate college on time. So we have an education pipeline and students are leaving year by year. Hank Levin at Stanford did a study on what is the statistical correlation between success in later life and a school intervention, the kinds of things we do in school. And interestingly, the only statistical correlation that he found, and he looked at a lot of different factors of the different interventions we do, class size and you know socioeconomic status and those kinds of things, the only thing he found was years completed in school. So if it's years completed in school, our job is to figure out how to engage students and get them to school each and every day, doing things that are meaningful, relevant, and interesting. The National Governors Association got in the game and basically said American high schools are failing to prepare too many of our students for work in higher education. The current Governor Napolitano was the current president of the National Governors Association. Her whole year, she termed the she had a whole innovation initiative, and really was focusing on how do we re-engage our states and our schools in innovation. So the governors are in the game, the chief state school officers, and I think that we're finding leadership across the country in places that you know we sort of look to the federal government to help us a lot, and Tim's here from the federal government, but we also have to look locally, district-wide, all of the different places, which is why it's great that this group has convened today. So I know you can't read this back there. I know I couldn't, even if I was sitting in the front row. But I'm going to go through this, and I'll read it to you, basically. Because this really sets up the disconnect. Okay? Schooling today requires and rewards getting the right answer and performing well in multiple choice tests. That's what hits the newspaper. Standardized tests. And it asks factual questions. They ask factual questions. 21st century requires figuring out the right questions and using skills to solve new problems. Today, we require and reward students working alone. There's a lot of stuff about cheating, for example. And what we need in the 21st century is students able to work in teams, get information from each other, find information immediately when they need it. The third one, schooling requires and rewards learning within academic disciplines. In the 21st century, it's absolutely multidisciplinary. It's working across disciplines. It's connecting those pieces together to make sense of the world. Today, we require and reward memorizing fixed information, 21st century learning how to find, communicate, apply information in a ubiquitous information environment. Today, we require and reward students to comply with hierarchical authority and really avoid risk, right? We really don't want, when you have, you know, thousands of students all the same age in the same school with lots of things going on, risk-taking isn't exactly that helpful. But what we need are students, are workers who can take initiative and provide leadership in flat organizations and take responsible risks. Today, we require and reward adhering to external and inflexible time segments, right? So the bell rings, you're done with this, on to the next thing. I mean, there's these short blocks of things. And what we found when students engage in project-based learning, it's really hard to teach students how to plan things over a long period of time. They're used to kind of doing things the night before or doing things within the context of these short time segments. And what we need are people who can manage time commitments, prioritize, and work within flexible time segments. We require and reward sitting passively in a linear text-based environment. And what we require today in the 21st century is the ability to interact in multimedia graphic-based environment. And finally, we really require and reward mostly working from the left side of the brain, and we really need students to be able to engage both sides of the brain, and creativity and innovation, again, are highlighted. So that's really the schooling disconnect. We have things, and as Julie said, no whining, we can fix a lot of these things. But people don't change when you tell them there's a better option. They change when they conclude they have no other option. That's, again, from Thomas Friedman's book. So hopefully a lot of these statistics, this setup, will get you that sense of urgency. You absolutely have to figure this out for your schools. So let's just jump through the framework for 21st century skills, because this is a good starting point. Because the first thing really is to figure out what outcomes do you want, and can you define those for people so everybody can say them, right? So the first thing, core subjects. Absolutely, we do still agree core subjects are important. However, the exact distinct pieces of information that students know may be different student to student to student. So when students engage in project-based learning, there may be one student may learn in depth about, you know, sea mammals, and another student in depth about land mammals or whatever. But information and content is important, but it's more in the context of the work that they do. So, absolutely, core subjects are important. Second, though, there are these 21st century interdisciplinary themes that have emerged that are incredibly important. Global awareness does not fit neatly into one of those core subjects. You can't say, you know, we'll do global awareness over here in our geography classes or our social studies classes, because it's also about learning world languages. It's also about science and understanding global warming, understanding why we need more engineers or all of, you know, a lot of different pieces fall into the pot of global awareness. A lot of communication and public relations and all sorts of things. The financial, economic, business, and entrepreneurship literacy, these again fall across a variety of math, science, social studies, English, language arts, etc. Civic literacy, same thing, and health and wellness. Students need to understand, that the virus will travel the globe 6 times before it burns itself out if we end up with an avian flu or something like that hitting the U.S. So these are the kinds of things that are 21st century themes, and there probably will be more that emerge that have become incredibly important day by day, but that's really a place to point to say we have to figure out, it can't be one more thing added onto the curriculum. You have to figure out how to break down the barriers between the disciplines so that we can accommodate these other kinds of themes. ICT literacy, you know, in 1998, ISTE did the International Society for Technology and Education published National Education Technology Standards for Students, right? And in 1998, it was about how do we teach to students how to use technology. Well, today, it's definitely not what do you point and click on. It's about how do you use technology to accomplish thinking and learning skills. Really important distinction. I don't think we need any more classes on even, you know, on how to use you know, this program or that program. Programs come and go, but it's really about how do we help students use technology to communicate, to solve problems, to find information, to be innovative, to communicate their innovations, to publish, to understand context. They need to be information literate, media literate, and media literacy today is not about how do you watch television and understand what the commercials are trying to tell you, trying to sell you, right? It's about how do you communicate effectively with multiple media types. You can't do that without technology. So this whole realm of information communication technologies and the literacies associated with them are very focused on using technologies to accomplish the thinking and learning skills. And finally, life skills. Somebody once recently told me that they thought that if you had to hire somebody that needed a manager, they were too expensive to hire, right? So that means we need every student to come out being responsible, being having a sense of their own personal productivity, understanding kind of what they need to do when they get up in the morning and go to work, go to school with a sense of purpose. I was talking to a headmaster from a private school, a very prestigious private school, and she was telling me that those girls at the school get up in the morning with such a sense of purpose that they're going to school and they have things to do, work to do, things to accomplish. That's how we would like every student to get up and go to school in the morning, just as their parents get up and go to work. And these other, you know, the life skills all are very important. And in an interconnected world, and in the world of things like Wikipedia, students also need to understand their role with respect to the online community. So if you have things like Wikipedia, they need to understand what's your role. If you're going to publish, you need to make sure that it's copyright free, or you have the rights to publish. You need to understand, you know, what it means. You need to make sure it's true and real. Lots of things fall into this this sense of life skills. But if you take all of these things together, that really is kind of the context of 21st century skills. And again, this graphic, my problem with the graphic is it shows it's like distinct buckets. It's not distinct buckets. It really needs to be taken in a context. Life skills need to be spread across the curriculum and the core subjects and the interdisciplinary themes. Likewise, the thinking and learning skills, the ICT literacy, those pieces. And assessment. Currently, our large-scale assessments are what people think about when they think about assessment. And we did a report, Margaret Honey from one of our consultants did a report recently. She did a worldwide search for assessments that will assess 21st century skills, and she was looking at things that were standardized and you know, could be done in a large scale. Didn't really find many worldwide. There were a couple buckets of promising practice, a couple interesting projects. There really aren't any. And if we wait to say, well, we can't do this until we have the assessments, and really all we care about are our large-scale standardized assessments, we're going to be waiting years. And although there are people working hard at coming up with new types of assessments that can assess performance rather than just content, we definitely have a ways to go on that. So what that means is you really need to think about re-engaging teachers with performance-based classroom types of assessments, formative assessments, the kinds of things that really will give students and teachers a sense of how they do with respect to these other skills. So that's the framework. So where do you start? Where do you focus? What do you talk about today? I'd suggest these are good places to start. First of all, you need to define or adopt, you know, decide you don't need to start all over again, but think through what it is you want your students to come out with. Okay, and then get everybody to talk about it. Get community leaders being able to articulate that. Get business leaders being able to articulate that. Get you know, your politicians to be able to articulate that. Everybody needs to start thinking about that, because otherwise the only context people have for really talking about public education, it's what's been reported in the newspaper for the last however many years since we've had No Child Left Behind, right? It's the large-scale standardized assessments, and either you're a low-performing school or you're failing or you're doing well. But those are numbers that really judge the effect schools are having on getting kids to take standardized tests. Third, you know, when I was in Alaska, you know, there was a gold panner that I'm like, how do you find gold in these streams? And he goes, oh, gold is where you find it. I always thought that was just a funny comment. It's true. But I think the same thing about leadership. And leadership is where you find it. And leadership may be your school board. It may be a fabulous teacher that's in one of your high schools that's doing really interesting things. And if we can elevate them and shine a bright light on what they're doing, that can be a leadership space. It could be your business leaders, your community leaders. Look for leadership everywhere you can. And the second part of that is then engage with all the different groups that have an impact on your students, your after-school programs, your girls' clubs, boys' clubs, community groups. I mean, I'm sure there's a wide range of folks here that are associated with different kinds of programs, museums. I mean, there are lots of places that touch kids. And again, if you can get everybody thinking about how do we graduate students with this skill set, these knowing and understanding these kinds of things, and get students articulating that so they can be responsible for their own work. They can have demonstrations of, here's how I can demonstrate that I can solve problems, or I can find good information, or research effectively, or use media to communicate my ideas, or whatever. Students are also who you need to engage. Assessment, we talked about assessment. And finally, engaging with teachers. The most interesting, and I don't know why this was such an aha, At the NGA summit on dropouts, they had multiple students there to talk about their experience. And I know you have students here today as well. Really important to listen to students, and not just your top students, right? A lot of times we engage our top students to come in. Well, at this summit, they had a student who had dropped out in ninth grade, and she was now 18 years old, working in a coffee shop, and they just simply wanted to hear her story. She wasn't a success story by any stretch of the imagination, but they were listening to what was your experience, what happened to you. Every single student, it wasn't anything about the big policy stuff that happened or, you know, what the superintendent school board. Every single student talked about teachers. That is their point of contact. That is their reference point. That's who touches those students every day. So if we do all this big policy level stuff without absolutely engaging teachers in the classroom to solve problems, to help students, we're missing the boat. And I think, again, with the current kind of state of where we are with how we measure schools, it really is disenfranchising teachers. And I think we have to re-engage teachers and reward them for helping solve the problem of keeping students in school every single day, one more day, so they can complete one more year of school so they have a better chance of success in later life. So there you go. Here's our design spec for the 21st century student: critical thinker, problem solver, innovator, communicator, collaborator, self-directed, literate, globally aware, civically engaged, and financially and economically literate. There you go. Small task. There you have it. So we do think there is a remarkable consensus among educators and business leaders on this key conclusion. We need to bring what we teach and how we teach into the 21st century. We need to pay attention to the bigger world. We need to bring a sense of complexity back into the curriculum and re-engage the students and teachers that are in our classrooms every day. There you have it. Thank you very much.